Can you tell us about the episode, the satsang, where you got the whole Vedanta vision and you then said to Swamiji, is it that simple? And Swamiji said, yes, it is. Could you tell us what images you had in your mind when you gained the whole vision? I don't know if this is the same story, but the story that comes to my mind was when Swamiji was, this was at the very beginning, you know, so I'd only been with Swamiji maybe 3 or 4 months. But it was early on that I had realized, probably because Swamiji was talking about it or whatever, I had realized that Vedanta was a pramana. And for him, for Swamiji, the whole thing, to even understand Vedanta, you have to understand that it's a pramana, a means of knowledge, or for direct immediate knowledge. If that's not understood, then the whole shastra, the whole teaching, it won't work, because it's all just becomes intellectual, you know, because you don't know how to listen and all that. So I had understood that. So one day he took the whole group of us on, kind of, we were in Rishikesh at his ashram there. He took the whole group of us on a walk down to, I don't know, we walked for maybe half a mile where there was this big bonfire kind of celebration that was going on. And so we just trekked down there. And by the time we got there, in fact, it was getting dark. And so the fire was there and blazing. It was a great big fire, and a lot of people, including all of his students, were all sitting around the fire. And somehow, something, I don't have a good memory right now, but somehow that I was talking with Swamiji as part of the group, and I said, what I said was, Swamiji, it's really simple, isn't it? You know? And he said, yes, it's very simple. That's the problem. That's the problem. You have to, your mind has to unwind from all of its complexities, you know, to recognize the self and things just as they are, because it's too simple for the mind. So there's a lot of unwinding that has to go on. But yes, it's very, very simple. That's the story that I remember. Is it really possible to gain moksha in this life? Yeah. Yes, it is really, 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 really possible. And the reason we think that maybe it isn't, I think, is because there's a lot of hype, especially coming over to the West, and I think maybe in this era, even in India, the Westerners, at least in India, where it's like words like enlightenment, you know, and gaining self-knowledge, being an enlightened person. It's something that has been set up to be so far away from anything that we could possibly have. You know, and so that's another big complexity that's added on to gaining this knowledge, because you think it's not meant for you, it's meant for a special being that, like in the Yogananda, what was that? Self-realization or something. Autobiography of a yogi. Mm-hmm. It was so depressing. Mm-hmm. And only people that could walk on air, that there was these subtle beings, could possibly get in enlightenment. You should have to jump. One poor boy jumped off a cliff because to get a new body, you know, where he would be more qualified to get enlightenment. So this is in the autobiography of a yogi. The poor boy was in the story. That's somebody else. Okay. So anyway, there's, and then even I would say with yoga, the Sankhya yoga, it's all about gaining samadhi, you know, and being able not only to gain samadhi, but to be able to hold the samadhi. So there's a real hierarchy that goes on there, and you have to stay in the samadhi. I mean, during some schools, it's you still have to stay in the samadhi, and you have to be very careful because coming out of samadhi is like kind of like they can say like a bouncing ball, and their whole idea of enlightenment is quite much different. Also, it has to do with abiding just as the purusha, just as pure conscious being, having separated finally from the very real prakriti. I think in terms of my experience, most of us and most of us who do yoga or have a yoga practice, it's not so associated with Sankhya. And it's also even not so associated with the Patanjali Yoga Sutras. You know, once you get into what moksha means and all that, it's very, very different than what the Vedanta has to teach. But even then, the point is that what comes over to us who are not part of the tradition at all is something that's so far removed from anything we could ever achieve. It's kind of set up that way. And so it takes a lot of teaching just to have everybody come down to earth and see that the only thing that makes you qualified, that qualifies you, is that mumukshutvam. It's not that you have special siddhis, you know, or these special magical qualities, you know, that makes you qualified to even meet a teacher and gain enlightenment. That's all not real, you know. It doesn't have anything to do with moksha. It's not that you can't, and I don't know, Swamiji was a little doubtful about in this Kali Yuga, in this era, that these siddhis are even available, you know, maybe in a very, very shallow sense. You know, like some of the siddhis, like being able to become very large or to become very small or to astral travel or to take another person's body. It's just all these various siddhis that are probably very possible at one time. But what's one thing Swamiji said is a lot of this, the tapas and everything that's involved in gaining these kind of powers, is that hardly anybody even exists anymore. People don't even know, you know, the sampradayas involved in attaining these special powers. But the gaining special powers, you're still a person, a samsari, in the world with special powers. You know, so you can travel around, so you can become big, so you can become small, so you can become very heavy, so nobody can lift you. You know, that's one of them. You know? And I've even seen, like me, go ahead, try. Okay, so even in the some of the martial arts, you know, in Japan and China, these especially amazing capacities are there. They work very hard for those, and they are incredible, but it has nothing to do with enlightenment or self-knowledge. And so that's why it makes moksha seem far away, where actually the only thing that makes it far away is you're not a mumukshu. If you're not a mumukshu, then yes, it's far away because your mind has no interest in it at all. That question hasn't come. But if the question has come and that knowledge is wanted, then you're one of the few people in the world that has that question in a real way, that wants to actually must know. Mumukshu has to know. Has to gain this knowledge. It's not like, well, maybe. It's not like that. It's that I have to know this. There's a drive there to know it. That's a mumukshu. And that person is an adhikari for this knowledge. Now, this adhikarityam, like shama, dhamma, upadati, all of these different things that we went through, the viveka, vairagya, and the mumukshutvam, and this group of six qualities, all of these things, we all come to this knowledge with enough of each one of those in order to be able to sit and listen with, you know, with focus. We have enough. But they will mature into being complete. You know, like viveka can't really mature until the self is known, because it's nitya anitya vastu viveka, discrimination between what is timeless and what is time bound. You know what is time-bound, which is everything you experience, but you don't know what is timeless, so it has to mature into that. The vairagya it's a sour grapes vairagya in a way, because I realize that I can't get what I want from any of these things, so I don't want them really, you know, because I want something else. And then when I gain that something else, which is myself, then the vairagya is fulfilled in my own, in the nature of my own being. Because why I have the vairagya toward all of this is I know that I can't get anything lasting happiness. That's why the vairagya is there. So what is the fulfillment of vairagya is lasting happiness, ananda, the paramananda. That's what it is. So vairagya resolves into that. The mumukshutvam, the desire for moksha, resolves in moksha. You know, and the shama, dhamma, upadati, stiksha, all of these things become just more and more natural when your mind is no longer riddled with your likes and dislikes, raga, dvesha. So all of these qualities for a qualified student mature into self-knowledge. But you have to have enough of those qualities to even want self-knowledge. So there's no reason really not to get it in this life, except say if you come to this knowledge, it's really old. A couple of my students were like that, really, really old and still living also, but they'll always say something like, I wish I would have come to this knowledge when I was young. Yeah, I hear that quite a bit. But then I always say that, you know, I came to this knowledge when I was quite young because I got it in the last life when I was old. And I didn't have a chance to really fructify, to fulfill that knowledge, you know. And so it says in the Shastra, if you're not able to really fulfill that, to get that self-knowledge in this life, because maybe you started when you were quite old, then you'll pick up the thread when you take your next life. Either you'll be born into the house of jnanis, or you'll exhaust some karma, and then you'll meet your teacher. So if you think you're too old and feel really bad about it, because somebody else got it when they're young, well, chances are very great that they're just like you. They got it when they were really old and didn't have time, you know, to really thoroughly get it, so they pick up the thread when we're younger in the next life. So that another thing, problem with that reason for that question is because moksha, the idea of moksha is filled with all of these special qualities and special attributes, you know, that is not true. It's not that those special things don't exist, but you have to work for them. They all exist within samsara. You have to put in work. You know, lots of chanting, lots of mantras, lots of tapas, lots of upasana, you know, hundreds of thousands of chanting of mantras. That's a lot of mantras. That's a lot of japa. It's not, you know, 10,000 or 50,000. It's like 100,000 times. You have to be chanting all day long, every day for a long time. So what I'm saying, and there's other things too, but these are things that you have to work for, these special powers. And in the most of the traditions, including yoga, the Yoga Shastra says, don't get into that. Leave it alone. It's a distraction. You're just an exalted samsari in some people's eyes, not in everybody's eyes. What's the name for Ishwara in unmanifest condition? This used to confuse me too. The name for Ishwara in unmanifest condition is Ishwara. Mm-hmm. So you think of it like this. You have Brahman with Maya. Okay. So if I look at Brahman with this Maya, the Maya Upadhi, we can say the incidental attribute, as Swamiji says now. That is Ishwara. If I'm just looking at Brahman as the Adhishtana of Maya, then that's Brahman, the Adhishtana. But once I bring in Maya, and when I say Maya, we mean Maya. When I just say Maya, we're talking about the Sattva Rajas Tamas in causal condition. So Brahman plus unmanifest Maya is what we call Ishwara. So that's what we say, Ishwara. Then Ishvara is Brahman with this Maya, an unmanifest condition that goes through this beginningless process of manifestation and then resolution, manifestation, resolution from beginningless time. So thinking of it like that, when we say, when the Maya is in causal condition and has its being only in Brahman, okay, then we have Ishvara and we have Prajna. Okay. Then when it manifests in the Sukshma Sharira, the total is Hiranyagarbha and Tejasa for the Jiva. When it manifests in the whole Stula Prapancha means the physical world, then we have Virat or Vaishvanara, both synonyms, Virat and Vaishvanara, and Vishwa for the Jiva. Mm-hmm. So that's what it is. There's always, what's the causal condition for Ishvara? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ishvara is the causal. Brahman plus the Maya is Ishvara. Mm-hmm. And then that Maya manifests into Hiranyagarbha and Virat for the total. In verse 5, Panchadashi, in the text we got it says, it is therefore clear that even in deep sleep, want of knowledge is perceived. What does want of knowledge mean? Jnanam, I don't think it's the best translation actually, but we'll look at it, what it means. Jnanam means knowledge or vidya, the synonyms, jnanam or vidya. Ajnanam, avidya. So jnanam or vidya means knowledge. Ajnanam or avidya, putting that in the front, right? It negates it. So if we say something is ajnanam, means in reference to that there is no knowledge there. Right? There is an absence of knowledge. Absence of knowledge means a want of knowledge. That there are some debates about that kind of knowledge, that kind of language, because ajnanam is not just the absence of something. So if we say the want of knowledge, that's like saying, in my mind, it's like saying the absence of knowledge. And that the absence of knowledge means knowledge isn't there. But it's not giving any positive being or attribute to ajnanam. Whereas ajnanam we see as something positive in that it covers and projects. You know, like if I have ajnanam of the snake, of the rope, I have ajnanam, I'm ignorant of the rope. This is the example that's used for this particular thing. If I have ignorance of the rope, then the ignorance covers the rope and projects whatever can be projected on a rope. So what I mean by that, it could be a snake, it could be a water streak, it could be a stick, you know, it could be a crack in the earth. It just depends. If you miss the ropeness of the rope, then anything that can take on that shape can be projected. It depends on what's in your mind. But what we say is ajnanam is positive because it has a covering power, it has a projecting power, and then also it can be removed. And when you remove the ajnana through knowledge, you remove the effects of that ajnana. So what that means is, so say, look, going back to the rope snake example, if I have ignorance of the rope and therefore the snake, I experience it as a snake. So the snake is projected on it. I have to gain knowledge of the rope in order to remove the snake. It's not that I can't gain knowledge of the snake as mithya. You can't gain that knowledge. You can gain knowledge of the rope, which then allows you to see the snake if it were to remain, which it doesn't, but I'll get into that in a minute. You would see then the snake would become mithya. So in other words, in our experience here in terms of the self and the world, it's only in gaining self-knowledge that you can understand that the creation is mithya. Without the adhishtana, without seeing what is actually there, there's no way that this world that we're experiencing could be mitya. It's the only reality we have. There's nothing to make it mitya. In fact, if we start to analyze it and there's no adhishtana, you know, the Buddha got into some trouble with that. Because if you analyze it, for the Buddha or for anybody, it's going to break up into an infinite regress of smaller and smaller and smaller parts. It goes on infinitely. So he will say, but how he'll deal with it is, this is in classical Buddhism, he'll say this whole creation is shunyata. And he says a little bit more. So shunyata means empty. It is shunyata's emptiness. So he says these nama rupas, he looks, the whole creation is nama rupa, which we can do that also. The whole creation is nama rupa. He'll say all of these nama rupas are shunyata. Means they're empty of any essence. That's what I'll say. There's emptiness. It's not a void or non-existence. It's emptiness. Emptiness of any essence. And then he'll talk about a paramartika shunyata. The paramartika shunyata is the absolute shunyata, and that shunyata is empty of namarupa, of name and form, which is interesting. What he doesn't do is bring that emptiness, which is like Brahman, free, it's empty, it's not a void or non-existence, it's empty of name and form. So Brahman yourself is empty of name and form. Like if you sit and just be with yourself, there's no namarupa there at all. There's just conscious being, you know. Whereas if you start to analyze this creation, and you analyze, you can't find anything there, you can't find any essence there, you can't find any substance there. If you just analyze it into an infinite regress, there's no end to it, but there's no substance. So we bring those two things together, that the Brahman, conscious being, is the adhishtana of this mitya, because of this creation, which is mitya, because you can't find it, comes into being, goes out of being. But what everything that is here enjoys the self as its adhishtana. It is, it is, it is, it is known, it is known, it is known, is infinite being. Yeah. And so that's how we deal with that. What was the question? I got lost there. Just 1 minute, please.
The absence of knowledge.
What? Oh, absence of knowledge. Yeah, I was saying that absence of knowledge is problematic because ajnana is something viewed as positive. You know, a positive substance. It's maya, it's mitya. But it's not the absence of something. So that ajnanam has to be removed. And also the ajnanam is removed by gaining knowledge of the thing that is not known. So I have to gain knowledge of the rope if I'm going to remove the mitya, or recognize that the snake is mitya. So that's technical. In fact, there's one acharya that got into big debates over the nature of ajnana. And so Swamiji has addressed that. Swami Martha Agalananda wrote her whole dissertation on that. Mm. Yeah, it's a big debate.
Do you remember, like, there aren't there six different meanings of the of the nunch?
Yeah.
Suffix?
Is there six?
I don't know there's that many.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I know that there are different meanings of it. But it's over my... I can't do it. I have to look it up. And I can't remember. His arguments, this guy, Sachidanindra Saraswati, his arguments are very hard to keep together in your mind. The only way I could do it is if I had a text that I was following, then I could do it. I can't keep it in my mind. It doesn't resonate with me. There's other parts of the stuff he's written is really good, though. Can there be aparoksha samanyajnanam? Can you gain an immediate but partial and imprecise knowledge? Okay, what we would say, I talked a little bit about this before. We all have The experience of the self is aparoksha. It's not aparoksha jnanam, but the self experience is aparoksha. Means that your self experience does not require any pramana, doesn't require any means of knowledge to light you up, because you're consciousness itself. But the problem is that even though you are self-evident to yourself, you know, you don't have self-knowledge. And so that means this self-evident self is superimposed by the mind, upon the body, upon all of the upadis. And that even though yourself remains self-evident, it's dressed in all of these upadis, dressed in the panchakoshas. So the panchakoshas are all the, that's what I'm seeing the self through, the self-evident self. It's good that yourself doesn't need a pramana to be experienced, because you don't have a pramana that will allow for even that experience, because everything goes out, you know. So, but the self, because it's self-evident, is its own self-experience, and then everything shines after that. All of this we don't know until we gain knowledge, though. Right? And so the knowledge, the self is aparoksha, means it doesn't need any pramana to illuminate. It's not away from myself. It's not indirect. I can't, you know, it's immediate. It's sakshat. We also use that. Sakshat means it's immediately present. But aparoksha jnanam means also, because myself does not require a pramana to be experienced, what is self-knowledge then? Because I don't need self-knowledge to know myself. It's already, you know, evident. And so what I need the self-knowledge for is called ajnana nivritti. It's removing the ignorance. And the ignorance has to do with the superimposition that we make of the mind, sense organs, etc., on the mind, sense organs, body. That superimposition is called an anyonya adhyasa, a mutual superimposition on the part of the mind that says, you know, I am the self, I am the conscious being, and I, the conscious being, am moody, right? And so it takes itself to be the conscious being, me. And then it takes me to have all the attributes of the mind, all the qualities of the mind. It's changing all the time, and, you know, sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm sad. So that's what we mean by the mutual. The mind takes itself to be me, and then takes me to have all of its qualities. So that superimposition is brought about by self-ignorance. So that ignorance has to be removed from the self, which is already there, manifest, shining, it's manifest for all of the upadis also, because the I am this body, the I am is already manifest. It doesn't require any pramana, but I have to get rid of the ignorance that causes that superimposition on the self shining me. See what I mean? Yeah. Anyway, we circle around this all the time, so it'll be fun. Can there be aparoksha saman? You meant samanya jnanam. That is what we have as an ajnani. We have samanya jnanam. It means that general, I exist, I'm a conscious being. And that's aparoksha samanya jnanam. What we don't have is vishesha jnanam. Where not only am I aparoksha, but I know exactly who and what I am in the scheme of things in reference to all of these upadis. I know who I am in reference to the whole creation. I know who I am. That's the vishesha, the particular knowledge. I have the general knowledge that I exist, I'm a conscious being. I don't know I'm the conscious being of the whole universe. I don't know if the conscious being that I am is the conscious being that you are. I don't know that conscious being is timeless. I just know I'm a conscious being. That's the samanya jnana. And nobody has to tell me. I don't have to be lit up by a pramana. In fact, I'm the very light, the very consciousness, which because of which all of our means of knowledge are lit up. Yeah. So that's a nice question, samanya jnanam. Aparoksha samanya jnanam. That's our condition. It's a problem. We need vishesha jnanam, because if you only have the samanya jnanam, you don't really know who you are, and that's why the superimpositions take place, you know. Once, like with this viveka, panchakosha viveka, and all of this that we're going, these prakriyas, are necessary in order to unravel that superimposition. What is the cause of beginningless ignorance? Why beings were not endowed with Atma Vidya? Is there a reason for human beings to take Mithya for Satya, for not being born with Viveka? Well, okay. First thing. What is the cause of beginningless ignorance? It's beginningless, so it doesn't have a cause. Right? Just think about it. If ignorance is beginningless, what's its prior condition? Because it's beginningless, right? So ignorance has no beginning, just like the creation has no beginning. The Maya has no beginning. That means this Srishti Stiti Laya, you know? The Srishti is the coming into manifestation. The Stiti is abiding here, like now, the word Stiti. And then the Laya is when the creation comes into unmanifest creation over, you know, millions of years process. And so there is no cause for the creation, and there is no cause for the ajnanam. Because there's no beginning for there to be a cause. However, we can look like this, is that in this beginningless creation, remember the creation has Maya itself, beginningless Maya, as it has two capacities, avarana and vikshepa. Avarana has the capacity to cover. That's really what we call ajnanam. And the vikshepa is the capacity to project. So we say that when the Maya projects, that's the vikshepa. But for Ishwara, there's only the projecting. There's Brahman and the infinite projection of sattva, rajas, and tamas. There is no ajnanam there because infinite. There's nothing that is not known because of the pervasion of sattva. So no ajnanam. But that is not the situation for the jivas, because each jiva has a sukshma sharira that is embodying this physical, the physical upadi, and it has no pramanas to kind of look around and see who I am. And the sattva itself, therefore, is contaminated or mixed with rajas and tamas. This body is tamas. You know, the prana and the karmendriyas are rajas. The sense organs and mind are sattva. So this body, mind, sense organs that I identify with me is not pure sattva. It's sattva abiding and filled with rajas and tamas. And so there's a mixture there. It's called an impurity there in terms of the sattva. So that allows for the reflection of consciousness because of the sattva to be also taking on the tamas and the rajas, which are being pervaded by the five sense organs. The sense of touch, for instance, pervades the whole body, pervades the whole prana, pervades everything, you know. And so all of this body, mind, sense organs, the whole thing enjoys consciousness, basically because of the five sense organs and the pervasion of the body through the sense of touch. And so this mixture is taking place, and the mind and sense organs being pure sattva, they reflect consciousness. So I am they think from their standpoint, I am the conscious being, right? And so, but that sattva in the form of the mind and the sense organs is abiding in rajas and tamas. And through the sense of touch, the sattva runs through the entire body. And so this body, which enjoys consciousness, which I am. The sense organs enjoy consciousness. I am the conscious being. I have these sense organs and this mind, you know, which enjoys me, and the whole body is pervaded, including the prana, is pervaded by the sense of touch. And so we have this mixture taking place. you know, which is responsible, that limit, the limitedness of it all is responsible for the ajnanam. That ajnanam is part of the package. And not knowing myself, then I project all kinds of things. I'm a conscious being, but I'm indwelling this body, which enjoys consciousness. So I am this body, which is the conscious being. So I need to now have a means of knowledge to differentiate that ajnanam, that self-ignorance, to differentiate myself from the objects that I've taken myself to be, because of the beginningless ignorance that's caused by the setup of maya. So maya becomes avidya, ajnanam from the standpoint of a jiva. From the standpoint of Ishwara, there's no avidya, because there's no limitation in terms of the upadhi. So why beings were not endowed with atma-vidya? Well, how would they be endowed with atma-vidya? They are the self, but how would they have self-knowledge? They'd have to have some pramana attached to them for the upadis to recognize to have some viveka with the self. So that isn't the case. There's no means of knowledge available to you built in to do that discrimination, to give you the knowledge that I am Ishwara. That's Vedanta, I am Ishwara. I have to recognize that this conscious being, this innermost being, is the innermost being of the universe, is the innermost being of all beings. So we don't have a pramana for that. But then what the Shastra will say, as soon as you want that knowledge, the pramana will be there. That's the promise of the Shastra. As soon as you're ready to have that knowledge where it's meaningful to you, then at that time you'll meet your teacher and you'll have that knowledge. And then once you have the knowledge, then you don't need your teacher anymore. You walk away because the knowledge is there. The ajnana has been taken away. It's been removed by knowledge, and so you get the knowledge, you get the pramana, you get the knowledge, and then you can leave. The example they use for that is, say, someone is on a trek in India, man is walking, you know, and he needs to cross the river. And so he hires a boatman to take him across the river. He gets in the boat and the boatman takes him across the river and then he's on the other side and he has no need of the boat anymore. The boatman and the boat are no longer necessary. They've done their job and now he continues on. So like that, when as a mumuksha, when you gain this knowledge, the object of knowledge, which is yourself, is already there, always has been there, always will be there. That ajnanam has been removed, and so that teaching has done its job. So you may take it with you anyway because it's so wonderful and you may become a teacher and all of that. But you no longer need it in order to know yourself because it did its job. But then you say, if you ask a question like, why were beings not endowed with atma-vidya? What could be the answer to that when the creation is beginningless? Why were they not? Why wasn't, you know, an appendage included? You know, an extra pramana that just circled around, you know? Star Wars or your ding ding ding. That little robot. It's okay anyway. What was that robot's name?
R2D2.
R2D2. Okay. So, you know, R2D2. Beginningless creation. So it just is what it is. And you can say, why didn't Bhagavan do it like this? Well, Bhagavan didn't do it. Bhagavan didn't do anything. This is Bhagavan, and it's beginningless. So he has not done anything at all. This is how it is. Is there a reason for human beings to take mitya for satya? That's all the ajnana, that's the lack of viveka. You don't even know what mitya is. Mitya has no meaning at all until you know what is satya. Once you know the self, and this can you can call this mitya. But until you know the self, there's only this. That superimposition is there in place, so there is no satya mitya until you know what is the satya. Yeah, for not being born with viveka. That's because of the ajnanam. Ajnanam means that there's no viveka. Yeah, the viveka has to come with knowledge. Because the condition is one of superimposition. You're born with that from beginningless time. That superimposition is a setup, right? Because of the sattva and the mind and sense organs, you know, they reflect consciousness. They think, I am the conscious being. That's because that mind is there, you know, which is not an infinite mind. It's limited. So that limitation is that limited mind that's indwelling the physical body and the prana and all of that is there. Because it's sattva and enjoys consciousness. So it takes itself to be the conscious being and the conscious being to have all the attributes of, that it has. And then, again, it's kind of a domino effect. It's it, the mind also, and the sense organs, the sukshma sharira, are in this physical body. So the sense organs, the subtle sense organs use these physical sense organs. The mind uses the brain, the heart, etc. The pranas use the whole body. You know, that's why we say linga sharira, because the pranas come, when the pranas go, the body is dead. So what goes? Everything that goes is the sukshma sharira, leaving just the shell. That's why they call it linga sharira. Anyway, there's no possibility really of viveka in that situation. The viveka can come after the situation because it's needed. But there's no possibility of not having that satyam, even though you don't know these words, if the mitya maya has its basis at the non-dual Brahman, that's a given. The mitya maya is a given, right? Like, why is there mitya maya? There's no reason. It's beginningless, it is. And so that comes into being as the creation, and the mitya maya has the satyam Brahman as its adhishtana. And so this superimposition has got to be there. If the sattva, rajas, tamas, there's no way the superimposition is not going to be there. And there's no way that the jiva with the mind, sattva mind, and sense organs is not going to take itself to be a conscious being. What else would it think? Remember, it is the conscious being. That's the other tricky thing, the mitya. Its truth is me, is the conscious being. 50% correct. Mitya has for its being only satyam. And from the standpoint of satyam, there is no mitya. Right? It's just free. So that superimposition is built into the mix. As long as once you say maya is mitya, there's no way that superimposition won't be there until the ajnanam is removed. Anyway, I think I'm skipping a few little things. If you're confused, I'll make it better later. Mm-hmm. Can't, if I'm taking a few shortcuts. Mm-hmm. It's just because I'm not thinking clearly. I'll do it later. Let's just say a chant.
Om Swasti Prajabhyah Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishah Go Brahmanebhyah Shubhamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshatu Parjanyaha Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamsho Bharahitaha Brahmana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarvesham Swastir Bhavatu Sarvesham Shantir Bhavatu Sarvesham Purnam Bhavatu Sarvesham Mangalam Bhavatu Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Satyamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotir Gamaya Mrityor Ma Amritam Gamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om Oh.